Welcome to Book Club for Movies, everybody. It's January 31st. I'm Ryan Miller. And kids grow up. It's Matt Amberg.
I thought you were going to say, and he's the Alexander to my plots.
Yeah, I should have realized that when you mentioned that you were watching the movie today. Mere minutes ago? Has it been a full hour since you...
Yeah, it's been like an hour.
Okay, all right, sure. Well, that's plenty of time. For Book Club for Movies, where we watch a movie every week, sometimes minutes before I say that. But not this week. But, well, actually, no, it's still been a matter of minutes.
I mean, it's always a matter of minutes when you get down to it.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
At this point, you're just being willfully ignorant.
Point being, if you're hearing this, you can do the same. And hopefully you did for this week for Hannah, because myself did, but also Matt, who's done a synopsis, if history is any indicator.
All right, here we go. Hannah, coming in at an hour and 49 minutes, written by Seth Lockheed and David Farr, directed by Joe Wright, starring Saoirse Ronan, Kate Blanchett, Eric Bana, Olivia Williams, and Jason Fleming. Here is your Book Club for Movies synopsis for Hannah.
All right.
A teenage girl raised in the forest and trained by her father to be a world-class assassin is sent on her first mission through Europe. Hunted by an agency that knows the truth about who she really is, will take Hannah on a harrowing journey through a world she's never experienced. Music by the Chemical Brothers.
Just wanted to throw that part in there.
Hey, it includes information that I could have used previous as I struggled to describe what the music was like on paper.
Oh, it's the Chemical Brothers.
Yes, no, literally. I'm struggling to describe the music here. I'm like, it's chunky. It's electronic. There's another film I reference, but we'll get there. Rhythmic. And then at the very end, it wasn't even the end. I think it might have been after I look it up on Wikipedia. It's like music by the Chemical Brothers. I'm like, oh, that's the word I was looking for.
Mm-hmm. And I think it fits really well with the nature of the movie Hannah.
Oh, bringing it back. Nice.
That's, you know, I do it.
Well, you didn't want to start with the music?
No, we're done. The music in the movie is very good. I actually noticed it right away. I was like, oh, man, this is a good soundtrack. This is a, it very much so fits what that movie is.
And when you say right away, you probably mean at least a good 10 minutes in, because there's no music for the first 10 minutes of the movie until it gets a little bit more industrialized, let's say. Which is probably a bad descriptor for the Chemical Brothers. I don't know. Maybe?
No.
There's industriousness to their...
No, they are industrious people, but I would never describe their music as industrial. Not even...
Not definitely not within that genre all or anything. But
good. We're focusing too much on the Chemical Brothers.
We certainly are. Hannah is a movie that I saw probably very close to when it came out. And we're talking 2011, so not terribly long ago either, really. Just almost 10 years ago, that's all. Jeez.
Wow.
But loved it. And I don't even really remember how I came to it, but I don't think I've seen it again since. I watched it maybe in rapid succession again another a month later or something like that. But mm-hmm. It's something that kind of fell by the wayside. And I have this stupid thing I do with movies that I really enjoy is I kind of let them, for the most part, disappear for a while.
Sure.
Because I don't want to overuse them. Like, this is why I'm not even caught up on my Wes Anderson stuff. But I don't know. This all goes back to what I like. I don't know. I didn't know if this was going to hold up in a lot of ways.
Because
sure. I remember it being a movie that I thought really wanted to have its cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. And what that cake is and what eating it would entail, we'll find out. But I didn't know if that was going to turn out how you would respond to it. And I found out you had never seen it before.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious about a lot of things.
Apparently. All right. Bring to me where the curiosity lies and I will... provide you with the banter you desperately require.
I guess to define that, since that can be a question that runs throughout our discussion here, when I say have its cake and eat it too, it's an action movie on its face, but there are almost just art house qualities to a lot of what they tried to do. And it's directed by, was the dude?
Joe Wright.
Wright? Yes. Who I looked up just to make sure he had done something else I had heard of. And sure, yeah, Pride and Prejudice, the Keira Knightley one, Atonement, most recently The Darkest Hour, which I have but haven't seen. Basically no other movie like Hannah.
Well, you know, but they're all about individuals, you know?
I guess.
A guy named Winston.
Winston, Ghostbusters, and British history.
One and the same.
Together again. So, Hannah.
I mean, to be fair, they could bring Winston Churchill to the Ghostbusters.
Oh, they could. That's in so many ways, really, too.
No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
The UK Ghostbusters.
He's back, and he's a lady.
There's a ghost. We better get him. What's all this?
Wait,
then?
So Winston Churchill's the Ghostbuster? And
no, no, no. He
I thought
is
maybe
a ghost.
He was coming back as a ghost.
No, he is a ghost, but they're like, oh, there's a ghost, and they don't realize it's actually the ghost, and then they're gonna it's gonna be a Slimer. Churchill is like like the UK Ghostbuster Slimer.
Oh, I don't I don't know how we discuss this movie now, which is so much less of a movie.
That's why I mean what isn't after that?
But Hannah
Banana,
what it wants to have and also eat, I feel like, is that artsy aspect too, which at this point I can't even remember if I mentioned. That's the weird thing about this movie to me. It is an action movie on its face. It has Saoirse Ronan. It's not that hard, actually.
It's not at all.
It being an action movie star here, but it's directed and edited. Also thematically, yeah, in the way it uses the fairy tales and the German stuff, like really artsy looking. And I feel like that's not going to land with a lot of people. I feel like also it's not going to get pulled off by a lot of people. If anybody, I'm having a hard time thinking of another film that tries to do something like it right now.
Run Lola Run.
See, that was the movie I almost mentioned but didn't before to tell you that I was going to bring it back. Yes, that came to mind many, many times. Okay.
I'm a winner. Yes.
Run Lola Run's a good freaking movie.
I love it.
Is this a good freaking movie?
It's good. It's good. I wouldn't go as far. It's definitely not a good freaking movie. It's pretty good, though. It's entertaining for sure.
Oh, okay. All right. This will be interesting then because... For me, it did land again, at least as well as it did before, but I can still see how it could fall apart for some people. So I want to know how it fell apart for you.
Okay. So do you actually want to step through this movie or do you just want me to...
Yeah, no. That was a here goes the discussion, okay. Not a answer this question in a sentence or less right now.
Okay. So I can preface all of this by prefacing it.
Very good. Okay. So the way this movie begins, let's say, is, I think, instructive of everything we're talking about so far. For me, and hopefully we can diverge just right here, right off the bat, because for me, this is one of the strongest beginnings of any film that's been. Like, it's and one of my favorites, period. And maybe that's where we're going to draw the line quite often here, is whether or not it's my favorite or, you know, actually good. But it begins with Hannah in the forest with her dad, Eric Bana, and you know they're isolated. And she's shown hunting a deer. She shoots it with an arrow, comes up to it and pulls the arrow out and says, I just missed your heart, right? Yes, I just missed your heart. And from right then, right after she completes that sentence, hard cut to the title. Just takes up the whole screen. Bam, might have been with a gunshot too. Hannah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because she says, I just missed your heart. And then when she says that, she points the Luger at the deer and shoots it.
That's right. And finishes off the animal.
Yeah.
And then we get a little bit more of the story about how they are secluded. We don't know why, really. We know that there's a little homing beacon, and as soon as she hits the button to turn it on, she is going to put everything into motion. I think Eric Bana's words are something along the lines of, she's not going to stop until you are dead or she's dead.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't hit the button right away. There's a little bit of back and forth because she's trying to prove to her father that she's ready. This is interspersed with a lot of kind of training, you know, her dad trying to get the upper hand on her and her actually having to defend against him and their relationship maybe being a little bit strained because he is such a taskmaster. There's no doubt about it. You know, he's very serious about this training.
It's very Rocky IV.
Okay.
A lot of montage with boxing and like Survivor, Eye of the Tiger. Also, there was some reminiscence in that section of the movie for me. It immediately made me think of Batman Begins, like when he's up learning how to be a ninja. Sure. And stuff. Yeah. You know, they're not the same thing, but there was like a dotted line for me on that.
No, for sure. And I think even with Rocky, I don't think you're completely wrong. Like, this occupies that space, even though with Rocky, I think it's we're coming in a little sooner to this thing. Because there is a legitimate montage, and I haven't noted here also, it's one of the pieces that I think makes this one of the strongest beginnings for me still, is that there's this training montage, but it's done rhythmically to gunfire and to all these hard cuts. Like, it is that thing from those other movies, even if it's taking place a little bit sooner. But it's not done like those other movies. Like,
sure.
Tell me I'm okay. If I'm still on track here. All right.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that one of the things that I pulled from this is the overall editing and the cinematography of this were really well done. There are a lot of
awesome,
really fantastic tracking shots that are like full one shot things where she's moving in between, you know, trucks and other things, and the camera's kind of following her and then swings back out to show where other people are. And especially the beginning where we're finding her in the forest with her father. It's a really beautiful and novel thing to have this. It's almost that caged animal, that caged wild. It's a wild animal thing where she is totally out in this forest, totally covered in snow. This is how she lives, and you know she's going into the big bad world, but in some ways it's almost that Rorschach thing, you know. Yeah, I'm not stuck in here with you, you're stuck in here with me. That's kind of what she has going for her.
Oh, from The Watchmen, right? Not the psychological test.
No, also that.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
When I look at this, like, that was the first thing I ever thought of before I ever read the comic book.
No, I mean, this movie is a Rorschach test, really, in that way. I think that's why I'm interested to see how we come at this. Because I could see somebody reading this movie as kind of all flash and no filler, you know? Because it is very flashy at times, and it uses that Chemical Brothers soundtrack to fantastic effect. Like, there's a moment where she's escaping somewhere later in the film, and it's just straight up, like, again, hard cuts, and the music's going into the beat. It kind of just goes in, you know, she goes around in a circle, essentially, but it's cut together like a strobed
type
thing, and the camera's just rotating. You know what I'm talking about now?
Yeah, it's that part where she's running through the underground tubing thing. Like,
it's a wind tunnel, but yes, she's escaping a facility, which we'll get there.
And the camera, it does these interesting things where it's showing her running one direction, but then the camera kind of jumps to different angles for it, and then it spins around. Like, it's really cool. And what it does that I think is interesting in that moment too is it's a visual representation of kind of what I think is going on in her head in that moment. Like, she knows she has to get away, but she is just everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
Right.
And all of that in a place where she is like upside down. She doesn't know anything about, or very little about, the quote unquote mainland.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad to hear you say that, especially that you did like the editing and all that, because I thought that was fantastic throughout. But to finish the thought I think I had, I could see somebody watching that and being like, oh, fancy. Like, oh, that's great. Like, I get it. Because it's not necessarily subtle. Like, nothing about this is subtle in a way that I guess maybe when I say art film, you might expect. Like, none of it's that. But it is flashy. But I do think there is substance, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Jim Jarmusch presents Hannah.
Boy.
The pretentiousness level would be off the charts.
A Jim Jarmusch action movie. That's how I might explain this to somebody in shorthand. And to which they would not understand anything, because that just doesn't even make sense. Like, I've just said a thing with words that go together.
I know all those words, but that sentence doesn't make any sense.
But eventually, within the story, she does hit that switch. So we know stuff is happening from there on out. Eric Bana knows stuff is happening from there on out. So he takes off. And sure enough, Marissa Viegler, Cate Blanchett's character, has been apprised of who they think is Eric Heller's location. So they send the troops, and Hannah's the only one there left. And after she dispatches a couple dudes to make it look like her dad got away, they bring her in, and they send in a lookalike, because the only person she wants to talk to is Marissa Viegler. So they send in a lookalike who's got an earpiece, who convinces Hannah that this is her. So Hannah starts crying, gives her a big bear hug, and breaks her neck.
just right there.
And then this is actually where that escape sequence comes into play that we talked about. She fires on all the cameras, gets out through the door because they were not expecting this. They didn't know she existed. No, they did know she exists, but they didn't know anything about her really other than...
Yeah, because they were running tests on her, which is where they found out that her DNA is abnormal and that there's something funky about her.
Right, right. I guess they didn't know... No, they did know, actually. By the end, and maybe this is all just what Marissa Viegler has withheld... Yeah, actually, I think that's got to be it, because remember, she burns the file later on?
Yeah.
She's the only one in the know, really, here about the entire story, which we won't get until the end of the second act, I want to say.
Yeah, that's about right.
So Hannah needs to escape. She escapes, and thinking that she has killed Marissa Viegler, that when she killed that double, she had killed him. She communicates with her father, who has taken a separate route, and they were going to then meet up, but is able to notify him that she is dead via postcard, as they had arranged. So they both at this point think that she's dead. And that's really where the heart of the movie takes off, and where apparently if you ask any of the directors or writers about it, it's largely about, which I think is why they also titled the film Hannah and not, you know, random action movie title. Because now the movie is about Hannah, and it's about a coming of age story, for lack of a better term, right? In fact, there's the quote from Wikipedia that seems to be patched together from a bunch of different interviews and probably press junkets. It says, according to the official website, Joe Wright, the director, has said that the movie's theme is a fantasy about overcoming the dark side during the rites of passage of adolescent maturation when a child transforms and has to go into the world. So there's like five different quotes in that one sentence. So
didn't we just say that?
Maybe,
like,
I don't
word
know.
For word without ever having read that before or heard it. We were just like, maturation, and that's what they call it. Maturation Amberg, that's me.
Yep, maturation. I could see that being somebody's reading of the film, but I still don't think that does it justice, really. But I'm honestly going, I feel like, on and on about this thing, and I probably will continue to do this.
No, you're good,
so,
man.
I think that's the beginning of this thing. Where did you have maybe your largest issue with it from here on out? Like that's the context. Anything you say from here on out should be explainable in some way.
Sure. So one of the big things about this movie is it's very much a fish out of water type thing. Those movies are fine. I like those. But they can get caught up in themselves in the weirdest of ways. It's a minor thing, but it's something that just kind of bugs me when these movies do it, is that for some reason, certain things she just knows how to do. I'm in the new world. Hey, everything's fine. But other things, like, I'm going to freak out over what the hell a television is. You're going to tell me that your dad, this is not like you were in the 1800s. It's 2000 or it's 1990. It's whatever it is. The TV has been around for many years. And you're going to tell me that in all this time, your dad, who, by the way, you're prepped, your dad knows you're going out there at some point. You're going to go there. I'm not going to prep you for any of that, though. I'm not going to tell you what a TV is. I'm not going to, like, by sitting there reading her a story and then going, you know, back in the mainland, TVs also exist. Back, you know, like you're all he's doing is training her in the art of murder, but giving her no practical skills to go out into the world. And yet she can easily pick up, go, oh, I can do this computer thing. I get that. No problem. Click, click, click.
Okay. That's interesting. My wife, actually, she watched this with me this time, picked that one out as well. The computer. I love this, though, because I think we're going to switch places here a little bit, because normally I think I have an issue and you're like, well, headcanon, Ryan. And I'm like, oh, okay. I think I get to headcanon you this time a little
bit. Do it.
So she has been raised in the woods, and I think they do get across that her father has not taken any other time for anything else. And yes, I guess when you break this out over to, she's got to be 16 years old or something like that, right? I don't know.
Yeah, she's something like that.
Sure, over the course of those years, yeah, it becomes less believable. But I think the movie tries to at least posit in that beginning that he hasn't taken the time for any, like, there's no time to teach her about what a TV is. Like, she needs to know how to kill a guy in under 20 seconds. So I don't know. Okay, maybe this is a better way to go about it. When she does get to the city, and yeah, you're right. It's not completely, that's not handled perfectly, let's say. And I will say this isn't a perfect film, even though, again, I feel like nobody's going to believe me by the time I'm done talking about this that I believe that.
Sure.
When she gets to that first hotel room, because she escapes this facility, which turns out is out in the desert, she runs into a girl that is her age, but normal, like ordinary, like painfully ordinary, in fact. That brings her then into, where did she end up being? She's speaking Arabic. Remember that?
She's in Morocco, isn't she?
Is that it? Okay, yeah. She finds a vacationing family in Morocco and stows away with them. And there's a great little moment where she's kind of watching them be ordinary through her little stowaway compartment. And before I even get to that small touch, the one I'm thinking about that I think relates more directly to what we're talking about is when she gets into that room, she gets the guy to give her a room, and he does. He introduces her to the television. He also starts a pot of tea boiling. He turns on the fluorescent lights. And in that moment, the lights sing. Like they've got like a hum into them. The teapot starts dancing. The TV, and there might be a radio on too somewhere. I don't know. But all those sounds are foregrounded to the point where it does overwhelm her. And she does kind of retreat or run away from her hotel room screaming or whatever it is.
Sure.
Maybe not screaming, but.
No, absolutely.
So I think that it is handled really well, I think, even if it does fumble later on with, yeah, the computer stuff. Maybe. Because she's super smart. She's completely book smart, right? She's been read to by, okay, maybe the same encyclopedia for her entire life. But
they had a number of books there. You could see all the books. Like, they had a bunch of books.
You're right. One of those would have had something about a TV in it.
Well, huh? And like, what, okay. You know, she's like, I understand electricity to a point. Thomas Edison invented it. And that's all you got out of that? Like, whatever book you read, like, it's unless true. It was like a freaking children's book, probably had a little more information than he made a light.
It probably didn't end it that right. Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
And she is very fascinated by turning the light on and off. But weren't there lights elsewhere when she walked in the place?
Things
like that bother me. They don't ruin the movie or anything, but they're kind of like, you know, you're supposed to expect that, like, the most obvious thing they don't get, and then a little thing they do, because it's just a broken system of how those movies fall together. It just makes me bonkers. That's all. It's
no, and actually, I think you're getting at the heart of the balance of this thing, the push and pull, the part of where it does try to have it and be it at the same time, is because, yeah, she's already been to the facility, which had a ton of lights there and cameras and stuff like that, which she understood how they worked.
Right, so, exactly. Yes,
for me, it earns that scene kind of out of order, because it's so strongly portrayed and edited, and again, with the sound used to kind of emphasize. But yeah, again, I'm not gonna, can't fault you for your reading, obviously.
Good. There are some good action sequences in that middle part, though. You know, you get the chase sequence kind of ends the end of the first act, I think. And then, you know, you get her, more of her running, more of her, you get more development from her and the family. And then you get that nice fight in between the shipping containers that leads to the end of the movie.
Yeah, no, I actually like the action throughout. It totally pulled it off. In fact, I remember when I first watched it, being just blown away that they did turn this 16-year-old girl into an action movie star that I completely bought in those scenes. And for that matter, Eric Bana has a really good action sequence in the subway when he rediscovers that Marissa isn't dead.
That was a very cool sequence, too.
Before we get too far, maybe, though, because that's kind of where stuff, I think, kicks back off, because while she does think that she's dead and her father thinks she's dead, there's kind of a cat and mouse thing going on, but it is backgrounded a little bit while she does do the fish out of water thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't want to blow over the fact that she does learn a lot from that girl. Like, she does go on her first date, you know, with those two guys that they find somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think when you say fish out of water, I think kind of more hokey than not. And there is some of that in there, but I did still enjoy it. Like, while they are on the date with those boys, and the guy tries, one of her boy tries to kiss her, and she immediately, like, puts him in a death lock, and and she's like, should I let him go? And the other girl's like, as opposed to what?
my favorite line, the thing I did actually, like, laugh out loud with, what was, while she's with the family, they she gets invited to dinner by the girl, and they're sitting at dinner, and it comes out that she knows her mother was killed, or her mother's dead.
Right.
And then one of the parents asks, well, how did she die? And she goes, by 3 bullets. And I just like, and Jason Fleming spits out all of like his wine. And it's just one of those perfect, all right.
That's, it belongs in another movie and still works here for me.
It works here not only as a moment of levity and you buy it, but you buy it because she's the fish out of water and has never had these interactions.
Yeah, she's completely socially inept. Yeah,
she doesn't know not to say that, which again, it's something that goes back to my annoyance with this movie.
Good, good.
How is she that socially inept? How did her father not give her some more skills to have an actual conversation? Basic thing for spies to do to blend okay. in is to be able to have a conversation okay. and not to go, well, as an assassin, my mother was killed by 3 bullets. It's like, what are you doing?
Okay. I think that is addressed in the film. And maybe we can move quickly here now, because it comes out that the thing that is messed up with her, she has been genetically engineered. She gets her little DNA sheet that says she's different from the first encounter at that place where she's kept hostage at the beginning of the movie, and holds it with her the whole time, shows it to the girl and is like, you know, I don't know what it means. It just means I'm different somehow. And then that's where later on she Googles DNA and finds out. Spoiler alert. We're going to spoil this movie. Again, I don't think anything we're going to say is going to take away from anybody's enjoyment of it.
This movie came out in 2011. It's 2019. Deal sure. with it.
Sure. But finds out that she was bred to be emotionless, to be a killing machine, to be a super soldier, right? Like some of that was supposedly bred out of her.
Sure.
You know, or genetically manipulated out of her, supposedly.
I guess you could say she's a sociopath, but on the same token, like the fact that her father at no point taught her to have a conversation. Like, yeah, you got genetically engineered to be a killer. Again, most times when you're a spy of some type,
sure,
you still want to be
able
to...
She's not James Bond. I mean, when you say spy, you're talking about like... Like even her dad, Eric Heller, who is the consummate spy, you don't get the feeling, although you don't see him in any social situations, you don't get the feeling like he would be that kind of guy, really.
He still seems like he can have a conversation, for crying out loud. You know, it's one of those things that for me, it kind of strains a bit of credulity. But again, it's part of the fish out of water thing. It's part of the stranger in a strange land thing. You know, it's you're working with what you can work with. So fine.
But you don't buy it. No, that's fine. Because honestly,
don't.
I think you are literally at the heart of this movie, because the relationship with her father, her DNA, the very first line in the film, which the film is also ended with, I just missed your heart. It's asking the question somewhere along the line about whether or not she was a success as an experiment, like whether or not she does, you know, have any empathy for anything. Like, what is she ruthless because she is indeed ruthless, or is the whole middle of the movie where she learns that, you know, people love essentially, you know,
the value
shares
of friendship,
a kiss with that girl at some point,
the value of friendship, and how much love was in her all along.
However you want to put it, and again, it's not subtle, but I think that is what the movie wants to have at the same moment. Aside from even all the artsy like editing and direction and all that stuff, it is asking the question about, you know, how human or because, okay, they find out that Marissa's still alive, the hunt is back on in a way, and we haven't even mentioned Tom Holland is in this film. So after that scene we described, where everything gets noisy and she gets kind of overwhelmed by the real world, it cuts to Marissa going and hiring this mercenary because she knows Eric Heller is still alive, the father, and she wants to go after him. So she essentially hires this dude to go after Hannah only, it seems. And that takes place right after Hannah's overwhelmed by her room, her hotel room. And I think that works to introduce this character as well, Tom Hollander's character, in that he has kind of harnessed all that worldly noise and energy and refined it to a point in a way. Like he exists in a, what would you even call that? There's a girl on stage doing like a bad dance to like the weirdest music. Like he is this kind of hedonistic purification of everything that just messed up Hannah and her hotel room, right? Like
that character is super interesting too, because
right at the least
he embodies this character, and you can see it in how he dresses and what his hair looks like. He's got this spiky
like some
blonde.
Of the best tennis uniforms you've ever seen, right?
but he encapsulates all of that in a whistle. Like that's his,
right? Yeah,
and it's very effective.
He is. He's a really good bad guy, and he's the guy on Hannah's tail for most of the movie, as Marissa's supposedly chasing the father or whatever. And to which I'll add, I think the pacing is actually pretty perfect in this thing.
Sure. I think one of my issues with the movie also is that I think the runtime is a bit long, an hour and 40.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, there's about 10 minutes in there I think probably could have been shaved off.
Well, the middle does take time with that whole fish out of water thing, like I said, because it...
Yeah.
No, not even that?
I don't know. I just feel like the movie kept reiterating the same things over and over again. And I don't know. I guess there's plenty of stuff with like the, with some of the Kate Blanchett stuff could have been pulled out. Some of that middle stuff for sure. Some of the, like the stuff just with Eric Bana was like,
cool. Yeah,
the fight scene's a great example. Yeah, it's a cool fight scene, and yeah, like the whole okay, we're gonna tail him, we know where he is. Sure. But that whole sequence is, and I liked it. It's a cool sequence. But it is very much a like we're gonna throw this very, very Bourne-esque situation into this movie, kind of in the middle of it, in the middle of nowhere. And it never needed to be there. Like, it doesn't advance the story at all.
It's more of a punctuation than anything else. Yeah. I mean, it's, in fact, hearing you talk about it, there is that middle part where it is more about her coming of age. And it feels like when they do revisit some of the Cate Blanchett stuff, it's more to remind us that that's there, I guess.
Sure.
Like, there is some of those, nothing really is revealed. Like, I guess maybe that scene where she discovers, actually, you know what? I'm wrong. You know what? I'm going to go back on everything. There are bits and pieces because we kind of find out that, yeah, Marissa was in charge of the whole program wherein Hannah was created, but Eric gets fed up with it and goes rogue, takes the baby with him with his wife, and they take off, and Marissa finds them, guns them down, kills his wife, and that's where Eric gets away with the baby. And that entire story is doled out, I think, in every scene when we get to it. Like, there is one where Marissa goes and discovers the wife's mother to get information on where Eric is. I guess that the movie could exist without that, really. That might have saved you some time there.
I don't know. There was just some stuff that, for me, that this one ran a little long.
How long did it run?
Hour 49.
Hour 49? Okay. You should mention that at the top of the show.
You know, I could probably bring that in. Let's roll into the end of this, because it is something I want to talk about. I want to get to this.
Okay, it's
conclusion.
I was afraid you would say that, because this is maybe where I have the biggest issue too.
All right, well, I can't now. Now I can't wait to hear your problem.
Hannah eventually gets to the location where she was supposed to meet her father, and it's in this defunct amusement park, wherein she finds a guy who's a kind of a clown magician, you know, in charge of this. It's Hansel and Gretel's house.
Mr. Grimm.
Is Mr. Grimm. Is his name Mr. Grimm?
Yeah.
Okay. Like I said, this movie isn't subtle. It's fine. But no, and it's... You know, reading about all the fairy tale stuff, I guess I bought that as an aesthetic, and I like how they sprinkled it throughout. Like, it's covers the movie like a sheen, but in a way that I wasn't completely... Like, everything in this movie appears analogous to me. Like, I see something in this movie, and I'm like, okay, what does that... Like, that means something else, right? And the fairy tale stuff, I wasn't positive about at first. I kind of just thought maybe they used it as an aesthetic and it was, I mean, it was doing the trick for me. But then you get to the end of the second act where she does come to this theme park, or it might be in the middle of the third. Yeah, we're nearing the show down here, however it goes. Wherein all that kind of fairy tale stuff is given its maybe most express shape with Mr. Grimm and this house. But it's actually treated as kind of a horror story at this point. Like, it references to me anyways what those fairy tales become as you get older, right? Like all this stuff that sounds like it has a meaning or sounds very sweet and cute, and then you get older and you think about the words and you're like, this is freaking messed up, right?
Well, like, I mean,
that's what that house is for me, right?
To be fair with that though, so at the beginning of the movie, Eric Bana reads her Grimm's fairy tales.
Right.
She goes to Mr. Grimm's house. The fairy tales from Grimm's fairy tales were never happy fairy tales. Like you get the Disney version, and that's what a lot of people think of when they think of, you know, Snow White and Cinderella and Sleep.
But
one of the funny things that because of the fairy tale thing, it popped up for me was with Tom Hollander's character. He's essentially supposed to be the big bad wolf, and he's going and gonna blow her house down and all that stuff. I mean the aesthetic is definitely there, and if you're looking for it, you can definitely find things that are analogous to those stories too, you know that are like, that's a little reference to something in Grimm's.
Yeah, I get that. I guess I just finally found meaning in that. She gets to that house. She's kind of relieved. Like, she's reached the end of her journey. Like, she's laughing at Mr. Grimm in there, everything he does. Like, it's a really saccharine part of the movie that is filmed like it's horror. And since we know that we're nearing like the least happy part of the movie, probably. Actually, well, Eric's already been killed at this point. But she hasn't found out. It just took on that feeling. And again, not subtly. Of kind of when the fairy tales die for each of us, right? And I guess where this fairy tale died for me a little bit was Marissa does show up with Tom Hollander, for that matter. Isaacs is Tom Hollander's character, by the way. Tom Hollander himself is probably not evil. Isaacs.
We can't possibly know that.
They show up at this place and Hannah just runs. Hollander's how does he die? He dies somehow. He's taken out of the picture. It's just Hannah and Viegler at this point, Kate Blanchett. And Hannah just runs from her, and I don't know why. Like Marissa has a gun, sure. Eventually a chase happens. Hannah's stowed away an arrow in her sleeve, so they're both kind of armed, and they chase each other up to this tall thing. And again, I'm like, why? Why is this still going on? Like, this better not just be to get to a more artsy death at the top of something.
Right.
I guess I don't know if that was completely solved for me, is where I had the biggest problem. But eventually she does trip and fall because she has been wounded, Marissa Viegler. And Hannah comes up on her, I believe removes the arrow just like she removed it from the deer in the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
Says the same line, "I just missed your heart," and then shoots her in the head. And we get the Hannah title card once again, same as before.
Yep.
So by the end, I'm still heads over heels for this thing. Like, I'm like, freaking cool, I guess. In no way that I could probably justify. Like I said, I can see people seeing this movie and being like, you know what? I get it. I see what you're trying to do.
I think I'm the guy who goes, yeah, I see what you're trying to do. It's pretty good. And, it's an entertaining flick. I enjoyed it. I will probably never go back to it. It's not something that will stick in my head. It's not an action movie where I'll go, oh man, that movie did this more better than anything else. The intro, like you said, was great. I did like that. That's not like, but it's not an intro that's going to be an all-timer for me. I'm not going to remember that intro. For me, it was kind of a very, you know, kind of just a forgettable action movie. It was cool.
Well, shoot.
It was cool. I dug it. I just, it's all right.
Okay. I feel like movies like this that kind of go Because it doesn't hold anything back.
No,
give it that. Like, it doesn't at any point try to mince and be like, okay, well, maybe we should get more traditional. Because, like, the one movie I did keep thinking about with this thing was actually The Bourne Identity, which I feel like you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's definitely Bourne Identity in here for sure.
But, and it's not just the European-ish to it, I think, because the Bourne movies are very much kind of anti-action movies. Like, they zig where every other movie zags in a lot of ways. And I think this does do that, although it obviously tries to get way more emotional than a Bourne movie, and whereas the Bourne movies are kind of hyper technical as well, and this really
they're way more kinetic. The Bourne movies are way more kinetic.
But Hannah does put in, you know, some of that weird stuff, some of those crazy edits, some of those things where, you know, again, action movie audiences are probably like, why? Like, they don't, you know, they might put up with it, but not, and you know, and then, you know, art house audiences are going to be like, oh, that's great. Why does she have to, you know, shoot the dude in the head a bunch of times too, type thing? So,
well,
does it have its cake and eat it too? For me, it does. For you, it does not.
No, it nibbles. There's some crumbles, but it's mostly leaving the cake for others.
I'd still give it 5 million stars. It's so many stars, Matt. It must be a good movie.
Out of 5,000,001.
No, now you're just being nice to me.
Hey, you liked it, you know? There's nothing wrong with that.
All right.
No, there's nothing wrong with the movie. Like I said, this is the movie is perfectly competent. The things that bug me are probably things that you can gloss over because it's a movie. Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, perfectly serviceable movie. All the performances were very fine. There was nothing wrong with any of them. There was nothing like, yeah, it's a cool movie. It's just not, like I said, it's just not an action movie that
you like.
Yeah, it just didn't resonate with me. It's fine. Like, I don't dislike it.
Man, okay. No, that's fine. And while I was watching it too, I was like, oh man, this thing's like thoroughly German in a lot of ways. He's going to love it even more. I've hit a home run here.
So. It was more of a bunt. But hey, that right there was Hannah. Hannah. I can't stop saying it because that's what Kate Blanchett says. She says, Hannah, Hannah. And then other people say, Hannah, Hannah. I don't know. Daryl Hannah, Daryl Hannah.
You're right. The whole thing falls apart.
That's where the movie ends for me. That was Hannah. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Let us know if you got more on that. If you got other things to say, podcast@bookclubformovies.com. You know how to find us on Twitter and all that. Next week's show.
Yeah, what's it going to be?
We're springing this. It's a springtime thing. And I think it's really funny. Because I can bring this back to the beginning of the show. You had mentioned that you kind of keep yourself behind in movies so that if you really liked a movie, you kind of won't go back to it for a while.
Yes, yes.
Oh, wait.
I'm not happy about it. No, that's fine. Yes, no.
No,
right.
I'm curious. What do you think I'm going to say?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm just, anytime somebody mentions, like, hey, sometimes you don't watch movies that you know you're going to love. And I'm like, yeah, what's wrong with me? so it's good that I have people like you to force me to do it. Yes, what? Let's hope it's one of them.
So because you mentioned that, and then you specifically brought up Wes Anderson. So next week we're going to do Isle of Dogs.
All right. See, and that's when I've put off. I haven't even watched Moonrise Kingdom yet because I'm like, you know what? I should really go back and watch all of the Wes Andersons.
Oh man, I almost.
That's why. See, this is what I do to myself.
Okay, I'm almost now. Here's the thing. Moonrise Kingdom, what do you want to watch now? Because both
I don't
those...
know. All I know is that I love them. They're one of my favorite movies ever. I've never seen them.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Moonrise Kingdom?
Yeah, you're telling me. You've seen both of them. You've seen like all the Wes Andersons. That's how good you are.
I'm a Wes Andersonite. So I'm good. Which one do you want to watch? Do you want to go in chronological here, which would be Moonrise?
I am now going to watch a bunch of Wes Anderson, so you can choose whichever you want, probably. I'll need to fit them in now at some point.
Okay, we're going to go with Isle of Dogs because I brought it up. And on top of that, I just really, really want to double feature that with Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Sure. Now, that's the one I have seen. My kids got into that one. So that one I may never have to see of my own accord.
I think, you know, when it comes to Wes Anderson, the only one of his flicks that I don't love... and I like it just fine. I just don't love it. is the Darjeeling Limited.
Oh, sure.
It's fine. It's a good movie. It's just not like, but it is like in terms of him, it's a lesser Anderson. Which,
and yet, how many times have you seen it, and when was the last time you saw it?
Oh, I've probably seen it 10 times. And
oh, really? Oh, yeah. Exactly.
The last time I saw it, oh, I mean, it was a few years back. I mean, I've seen all of his movies double digits. Absolutely no question. I've seen them double right. digits.
All right. All right. So, was it Isle of Dogs
Isle
next
of Dogs.
Week?
Isle of Dogs.
Look out for
week.
Movies, everybody. And seriously, do get back to us on Hannah, on anything. We're not going to do a rest of the show this week, but we will. I'm sure get into it next week. We go to full hour on this thing already still anyways. Okay.
Pretty good. All right. I got to tell you, by the way, next week, I'm kind of looking forward to talking about Tag.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Tag and you rewatched Game Night, huh? I see what was happening.
I did. Here. I did
Best
rewatch.
Out of town and you just, yeah.
Game
all right.
Night. Man, Game Night is Rachel McAdams, man. Not only just adorable.
Rachel McAdams, man, everybody.
Rachel.